Good morning, diners, travelers, and cooks.
Yeah, today's one in particular for the cooks.
Yes. And
for those people who don't know how to cook but need to.
Well, you're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig.
Where we do know how to cook.
Well.
Quite a lot. And we even have some of these tools. And when you're done with today's program, you'll want to have some of these tools too. Right?
Yes.
You're very quiet this morning.
Well, I don't know where you're going.
You know what I'm going to say next. Well, I'm not sure what I'm going to say next either, but.
Well, anyhow.
But the guys from.
You are a nutcase on timers and probes and
Timers and temperatures, yeah.
Yeah, times and temperatures.
The tough part about it is I break them frequently, and then I have to get another one. But the guys from ThermoWorks in Utah, of all places, stepped up and said,
Here's what you need.
We really know about this timing stuff. And this is the time of the year when you're going to be needing to worry about timing probably more than any other time of the year.
No, because you have all the family coming and you have to get everything out at the same time. You've got to have multiple dishes, including the big turkey.
Multiple timers, accurate.
Hey, we've gone as much as 27 people for Thanksgiving dinner. Yeah.
Anyway, I guess we should probably let the man talk about his product, shouldn't we?
Tim Robinson from ThermoWorks will talk to us about all these items. We're going to learn what to do with this Thanksgiving banquet and this turkey by talking to Tim Robinson of ThermoWorks, which is one of the leading, how would you describe the company on an overall thing, Tim?
We make professional temperature tools that are often used by home cooks.
Okay, that's a good way of putting it.
And everyone needs to have one, and I'm going to have you explain why from a technical standpoint. I know I need one because I keep on breaking the ones I have. and the ones I have, I buy cheap ones from Amazon that you stick in there and then
inaccurate and they don't last
and
very
they
long.
Don't last yeah. very long, which is why we're always
or I lose
you'll, it. You'll spend hundreds of dollars on cheap ones in the same amount of time that you could own and enjoy a ThermoPen.
Now I do want to ask a question before we go any further. You're the vice president of marketing for this company and your products are obviously very, very fine.
But why
a company that specializes in timers and probes? I mean, it's not intuitively obvious that this would be a great money-making business.
Well, nothing affects, you know, actually in terms of quality of life, temperature is pretty high up, too hot, you're too cold. That's certainly true for food. So we like to think that nothing affects the quality and safety of your food more than the temperature of the food. And when you're cooking it or doing anything else to prepare your food, you're basically applying different temperatures to that food. So properly measuring and tracking the application of temperature to food is something that can have a big impact, and that's where we specialize.
You know, I had a disaster with my freezer, which we used to keep, you know, when we had a full household, just absolutely stocked with quality meats.
Yes.
And it's in the basement. And so I didn't know, you know. So I got this aha moment. I said, what we really need is an alarm for when it stops working to tell us so that we can rescue all this food. And I went online and found out there are 10 million of those things.
That's right. When you need it, then you go look for it. But, yeah, this is actually a big problem faced by lots of restaurants, of course, who have literally tens of thousands of dollars of inventory stored in these freezers. And we help them equip them with data loggers that have text alerts. In case anything goes wrong, they can jump right on it and make sure they don't lose their food.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
And this is what you mean by professional quality products.
That's right. So we make professional quality products that are used by all the professionals, professional chefs, professional restaurants, and actually other applications, aerospace and manufacturing. But lately we've gotten a lot of attention because lots of home cooks have found our ThermoPen in particular and some of our other products that make cooking at home a dream. It really does change your life. Of course, I would say that, but it does when you don't ever overcook or undercook anything ever again because you know what the internal temperature is. It changes your quality of life.
Now, tell us what you said about this week of Thanksgiving being the biggest week ever.
we think of Thanksgiving as kind of our Super Bowl here at ThermoWorks, just because most people, you know, prepare their food the way they prepare their food, just like you. Until they have a crisis, they don't typically think of a thermometer. You know, they're pressing on their steak or cutting their chicken open to see if it's done. There's a better way, but they don't know there's a better way. But most people think about thermometry at least a little bit during the Thanksgiving week. The turkeys come with these little pop-up timers, which are atrocious.
Oh, they're awful. They don't work.
They don't work. They get you about 185, which is about 30 degrees more than you really want it. And it dries out the turkey. Your turkey becomes a desert, and then you reach for the gravy and the cranberry sauce. But most of them are actually thinking about a thermometer or a digital thermometer during the week of Thanksgiving more than in any other week. So that becomes a big area of focus for us.
Okay, now, interesting thing here. You can help me with this because you're obviously an expert in this, the application of your stuff. But one of the things that's always bothered me is when I put my thermometer in there, when I put my meat thermometer in there, people have told me that if you touch the bone with it, then it gives you a totally false reading.
Yeah.
Now, how do your products make it easier to avoid doing that?
A bone, of course, it's both an insulator and a conductor of heat, depending upon the stage of the cooking cycle. And so it does have a dramatically different temperature. Really what you're looking for when you're trying to take the temperature of food, people have this misconception that the food is at a temperature. Of course, there are actually many, many different temperatures in a food while it's cooking. It's cooking from the outside in. So the outside is hot and the inside is cool, and that changes over time. You know, the inside gets warmer and the outside gets even hotter. So when you're looking with a temperature, you're actually trying to find the lowest number. That's what we call the thermal center. It's the lowest internal temperature, and your food is only as safe and as done as the lowest internal temperature.
Uh-huh.
So if you hit the bone, you're actually going to get a false reading because that's not the lowest temperature. And the thermopen, one of the reasons the thermopen is so amazing is because it's so fast, it's giving you real-time information about those gradients. So when you put that very, very tip of the probe, you know, a dial thermometer, the sensor is about an inch and a half long, but in the thermopen, it's less than an eighth of an inch.
Oh, really?
So as you pull that tip of that probe through the meat, you see all the numbers change, and they go from maybe 155 to 153 to 154. 153 was the lowest number you saw, so you can be confident that that is the lowest internal temperature of the turkey.
Okay, but the last thing you want to do is with a turkey, just for as an example, and what we've read from professional chefs on the subject, you don't want to take the temperature much beyond 150 because by the time you're serving it, it's going to be 170.
This is a good point, yes, and so this is... We have long conversations with customers and other companies, turkey manufacturers, about this point. That's exactly right. There's a thing called carryover cooking. Two factors. One is the thermal mass of the food. So bigger cuts of meat have more carryover cooking. And also the intensity of the heat of the cooking environment. So barbecuing, low and slow type cooking environments tend to have less carryover cooking. With a turkey, you've got a big, huge mass of meat that's going into a high-heat environment, typically, like an oven. And so you can see a 10 or a 15-degree increase at that thermal center after you take the turkey out of the oven. That's it. So that's why you want to be sure to allow for that when you look for your pull temperature, as it's called, to get the turkey out. It's also important to note that when we talk about food-safe temperatures, the USDA recommends 165 degrees for poultry, but that's for the instantaneous death of all those microbes that are living inside the turkey. You can also do what's called pasteurization, where if you hold that same turkey at, for example, 163 degrees for a few seconds, that's going to achieve the same impact. Or if you hold it at 155 degrees for 2 minutes, it will kill all those same microbes. And those are published tables that the USDA puts out. So you know with carryover cooking, if you get it to 150 degrees, it's going to go up to 155. It's going to stay at 155 for a couple of minutes. You've got safe turkey that's also moist and delicious to eat.
Now, one thing that I find a meat thermometer especially useful for isn't just at Thanksgiving time. It's whenever I'm cooking pork chops.
Yeah.
Because Everybody has this worry that all the pigs in the world that have been slaughtered have trichinosis.
Yeah, well, that's
I understand it's been eradicated.
Yes.
That's part of the point I'm about to make.
But
people think that. So as a result, they're going to cook their pork chops to 180 degrees, at which point a special saw to cut them. and they certainly don't have the slightest little ounce of juice left in them. And
that's true. A couple of years ago, the USDA, recognizing that trichinosis has been largely eradicated, lowered its recommended temperature for pork from 165 down to 145.
Right.
That's what we recommend as a final resting temperature. Again, there's a difference between, you know, the pull temperature and the final resting temperature.
Right. So you're going to take it out of the oven at like 135 or 140.
Depending upon the size of the cut. If it's a small steak, that's not going to experience much carryover in a high heat environment, maybe 2-3 degrees. But if it's a bigger pork loin or something like that, then yes, you need to make more allowance.
Now, so listen up now further on, folks. If you want to cook your Thanksgiving dinner like a professional, here are the tools you need. And let's go through them one at a time, and then you can describe why it's important you have one of these as well.
So the one thing most people don't understand is that there are basically two different types of thermometers. There's a leave-in probe thermometer where you're going to place a probe and you're going to leave it there, and it will be measuring over time the change in temperature, but only at that one point wherever you put that probe. And then there's an instant read thermometer, and that's designed to verify temperatures, and that's the thermopen where you pull it through. I like to think of them as kind of the difference between a speedometer and an odometer on a car.
Oh, right.
One tells you how fast you're going now, and the other tells you how far you've come.
Now we missed one out here, and that's the timer.
Also need a timer, that's right. Time, we like to think of temperature as being the critical mark. You wouldn't take out a turkey just because the timer went off, but it's awfully helpful to know you're in the ballpark. And also, you know, sometimes you'll put the turkey in at a low temperature for an hour and then move it off. Also, you want to rest your turkey at the end for 30 minutes, so timers become very, very important. So the lead-in probe thermometer, we have a thing called the chef alarm, which has high and low alarms. That low alarm comes in it's very handy in other applications, but for the turkey you want that high alarm. But it also has these min and max constant displayed. It will show you what the maximum temperature that's been experienced is at that probe and the minimum. And that is really useful for that carryover, right? When you pull that turkey out, let's say you pull it out at 152, you want to see that it's getting up to some higher temperatures, right, to perform that pasteurization. And so you can watch, you can set the timer. There's a timer on the chef alarm. You can set a timer for 30 minutes, and you can watch that maximum temperature continue to rise during the rest as well.
Now, I wanted to sell something else for you first, though. and that's just a timer itself.
To give you
an idea how you're coming when you're cooking more than one thing at once in particular. But you were thoughtful enough, together with this character called Christopher Kimball, who actually designed this signature timer for you. But this isn't just a timer for one thing, it's a timer for two.
That's right.
You can time your turkey, and you can time something else
that's
kind of time critical as well. I thought that was really a brilliant idea.
At ThermalWorks.com you can find the Christopher Kimball Duo timer, which hangs around your neck. We also have a timer that has three, and then one that has four. Time stack actually times four different events.
We had one of those, but we couldn't figure out how to work it.
It's kind of fun when you figure it out, because the thing about the time stack is that you can record the alarms. Mm-hmm. So sometimes if it beeps, you don't know what it's referring to. But you can record so it says, you know, knead the rolls or take the potatoes off the heat. You can record that as the alarm, and then it will tell you what to do when the timer goes off.
Well,
it says that to you, does it?
This wasn't one of those. Yeah. This wasn't a ThermoWorks one. This is a considerably lower tech version. Okay, so that's the timer, first of all. So that sort of gives you a framework in which you're operating, And thoughtfully enough,
right.
I didn't even realize you could go between two. You can go up to four if you'd like to. Now, next up,
yes, you can.
Next up, which is red,
is
a ThermaPen MK4.
Yes, so the ThermaPen Mark IV is an instant read thermometer. It's not the one you leave in the oven. It's the one that you use to verify the doneness temperatures.
Okay.
So when your chef alarm or your lead-in probe thermometer alarms, you've set the high alarm, let's say you set it at 152, when it goes off, what it's telling you is that where that probe is situated, wherever you placed it in the breast or thigh of that turkey, that particular part of the turkey is at 152 degrees. But again, you're looking for the lowest internal temperature to verify the quality and safety of the food.
So you have to move
it. So when the alarm goes off, you pull the turkey out or you open the door of the oven and pull the turkey out, and you take that ThermaPen, which is so fast that it gives you real-time information. Those cheap ones you buy at Walmart, they take 15 seconds to adjust to a new temperature,
mm-hmm.
and nobody holds it there for 15 seconds. So basically, you're getting a guess. It's not a real a measurement. But with the ThermaPen, which has a professional thermocouple, that's why they're a little more expensive, it comes to the temperature in about 2 seconds, and then it reads changes in temperature at essentially real time. So as you go ahead and check the turkey near the thigh, near the breast, you can look for all those different gradients. And even though that chef alarm or that lead-in probe thermometer said 152, you may well see a 148 as you're probing the turkey with that ThermaPen. What I do is I reposition the lead-in probe thermometer until it reads roughly the same temperature as the lowest temperature I saw. Now I know that I'm really tracking the lowest thermal center of the turkey.
I see.
Put it back in and let it continue cooking until that part of the turkey reaches your target temperature.
Now that's the second item, and that one's sort of a nice pillow box red color. Now we've got the big mother of all.
Well, they would talk about that already.
Which is the ProSeries temperature probes, but it's got a whole lot of features you didn't even get to mention yet.
Yes, so we have a series of different devices that all work with the ProSeries probes, which is really nice because you can get different types of ProSeries probes. You can get a needle probe that's actually waterproof, which is really useful for checking thaw temperatures, which is something we haven't even talked about, but you actually want to check the temperature.
Oh, yeah,
and
that was the one that always, that was the one that got me to stump me, is no matter how early I pulled that bird out of the freezer, it took much, like twice as long to thaw as I thought it was going to.
It can, and you'll know if you actually take the temperature of the turkey before you cook. You'll know if there are still frozen parts to the turkey.
Yes.
And you really don't want to cook a turkey that's partially thawed and partially frozen. You're setting yourself up for disaster.
I must tell you, my friend Beezy, she had one of these things, the old-fashioned separate roaster, you know, the roasting pan that was on its own.
Yes.
Yeah, and she used to notoriously forget to take the turkey out and pull it out the last minute, still frozen, and cook it. And it was fine.
Well, you know, we've done some experiments with this, and you can actually cook a frozen turkey,
yeah.
And it turns out pretty well.
Except you end up with those things wrapped in paper in the inside.
Well, you got to take those out. Yeah, so you use a little bit of hot water in the cavity to get the giblets and the neck out of the cavity.
Yeah.
But you can cook a frozen turkey, and you can cook a thawed turkey, we like to say, but you can't cook a partially thawed, partially frozen turkey. That's really what sets you up for disaster.
That's unless you want to kill any number of your friends.
If you have ulterior motives, then go for it.
Now, is there anything we missed?
I would just mention that there's, you know, the chef alarm is one of the devices that we use that attaches to those ProSeries probes. The ProSeries probes, have the waterproof needle probe, you have the penetration probe. We also have air probes that measure the temperature
of
the cooking
that.
Environment.
I like that because then you don't have to poke holes in the meat.
That's exactly right. And sometimes your oven can be off in terms of what it says the internal temperature is. You can actually check that with an air probe. Or if you're smoking it in a smoker or you're on your grill, you know, you want to check the temperature near where the meat will be. We also have a product called the Smoke. I know it's a funny name, but we call it the Smoke Barbecue Thermometer. It actually has two inputs for two different probes. And that's really, really useful for either measuring the internal temperature of your turkey, tracking that, as well as the air temperature in, say, a smoker or on a grill. Or you can actually put two meat probes in as the two inputs and put one in the breast and the other in the thigh. You know, turkeys are unusual in that they have both white meat and dark meat. So you're basically trying to cook a, you know, a tender steak and a brisket at the same time.
Right.
And you want that dark meat to get to a higher temperature so the collagen can start to break down. So you want the breast meat at that lower one, in those, you know, pull it in the 150 so it can crest at 165. The dark meat you actually want to get to 175, 185. And so you could be tracking that with a second probe. And there are various different methods you can use to try and get different temperatures in those different spots.
Now, there's only one thing we have left, which is where do you get them? Do you sell them? Does Amazon sell them? How can people get ready for Thanksgiving by loading up on these devices?
Thank you for that question. So they are not available at Amazon. You need to buy them directly at thermalworks.com. We do have a couple of, you know, mom and pop cooking and barbecue stores that do shelve our products. But by and large, you have to find them directly from us at thermalworks.com, and we're guaranteed to give you the best price, better pricing than you can find anywhere else at thermalworks.com, especially at this time of year.
And I'm assuming you're going to also post on your website tips for safe
turkey.
That's
exactly right. We have, if you go to thermalworks.com/turkey tips, turkey tips, one word, you're going to see, you know, all of our blog posts that deal with the critical factors in thawing, tracking, and verifying the doneness of your turkey. So you'll have perfect results this Thanksgiving.
Tim, how did I know that was going to be the case?
We have an executive chef, our culinary editor, Martin Earle, here, who spends a lot of time producing great content about temperatures and critical temperatures in food.
Tim Robinson, thank you so much for joining us today on the Menu Radio. It's been a delight to talk to you, and we wish you continued success and an expanded product line so that people won't poison their friends.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been a delight to be with you.
Well, it's been fun. I mean, it makes me less nervous about this Thanksgiving. I always get anxiety attacks about these turkeys.
Yes, and you can know what the temperature is if you just use a proper thermometer.
Right.
I know I feel a whole lot more confident now that Thanksgiving dinner is going to be cooked satisfactorily, properly, the right temperature and all that stuff. I'm not actually cooking it, I don't think.
I was going to say, you're not even cooking it.
but at least I can deliver the tools to the person who is. So we hope you'll get yourself equipped and that this is coming out in enough time so you have no excuse but to get yourself properly equipped. And we'll be back dealing with other things to do with cooking temperature right after the break. So don't go away.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. Our next guest is a much revered, I guess.
Much celebrated, much admired.
Cookbook author. Yeah, because she gets it right on the dot, and you can trust her, and it's all information you really need to know and can use. She, of course, is Phyllis Good, who has written a book called
Stock. Well, she's written umpteen books, but
she has. But this particular one we're going to talk about is Stock the Crock, which is for all of you slow cooking enthusiasts. You know, I don't understand how we've been doing this program for 14 years that we have never before interviewed Phyllis Good, who is, like, more than prolific. Phyllis, welcome.
Thank you, Anne. It's great to be with you.
You actually you've sold more than 12 million cookbooks.
That is true, yes. I've been very fortunate.
You're very good.
Very pleased. Yeah, well, thank you.
Well, your latest book is Stock the Crock, which, of course, refers to slow cookers. Or to crock pot, which was my mother's generation of slow cookery.
Right. Yeah. Right.
But now, you wrote all of these books, and you sold all these copies of these books. And why another book now on the same subject?
An excellent question. And I had that very same question myself when I went to Time Inc. Books, who is the publisher, and I just said, I have another cookbook. Do you think we should go another direction, or should we stick with slow cookers? And they said, oh, no, we are going to stick with another slow cooker cookbook because they are as popular as ever. Slow cookers continue to be, I think, further refined. They have more capabilities. People are learning how to use them so that they get better results. And so I said, okay, I had an idea. And so that was the beginning, and it's, I hope, going to prove to be true, but I certainly run into lots of people who say, oh, I use it, you know, multiple times in a week. It's, I think, so popular because it really does help people feed their families at home. When their schedules are very, very full, they can hardly think about cooking, and this appliance really makes it possible for people to put food that they know is nutritional in on the dinner table in the evening, and it's so convenient.
Yeah, I mean, our son and daughter-in-law, they both work, and they
right.
Yeah, and they both have children aged 10. I mean, they have children, two children, aged 10 and 8.
Right.
And they swear by theirs.
Yeah, they are the perfect demographic for people who love a slow cooker. And yet I keep talking to people of all ages who point out to me how convenient it is, no matter your stage in life. And it simply does the work while you're off doing something else.
Now, the latest swarm of cookbooks that we've been getting, it has to do with this Instant Pot.
Yes.
Tell us what's the difference between, I mean, I know it's multifunctional, but but you have a preference for one or the other, or you just think the slow cooker is better? I mean, why did you not write an Instant Pot cookbook?
Well, first of all, I don't have experience with a pressure cooker, and so I didn't feel prepared to do that. I do not have an Instant Pot, but I have talked with many people who do, and their comment is that, in a way, it provides an elementary slow cooker, an elementary pressure cooker, and I guess kind of an elementary rice cooker, so that the functions are not as complete, or it doesn't have as many possibilities as using a slow cooker that is intended to be only a slow cooker. One thing I would point out is the Instant Pots I've seen are cylindrical. They're round.
Right.
And I think one of the strengths of the newer slow cookers is that many of them are oval in shape. And that fits so much of what we want to put into a slow cooker, a chuck roast, a turkey thigh, a whole chicken.
Right.
I was just at the grocery store. I bought a pork butt because I'm having guests and I want to do carnitas. So that in itself, I think, is really wise. It also, my slow cooker has, I have a few, but the one that I use the most is a 7-quart, and so I can do a sizable amount of food in it. But just yesterday, I did baked a gingerbread, a layer of apples on the bottom, and then gingerbread batter on top. I baked it in air quotes, of course, in my slow cooker by putting the batter into a loaf pan. And then I set that loaf pan just straight into my slow cooker crock, put the lid on, and let it go for 4.5 hours. Well, you may say, why would I bake in a slow cooker? Well, the reason was it was a warm day. I didn't want to turn the oven on. I also had a whole bunch of errands I needed to run, and so I knew I didn't need to tend to my gingerbread for 4.5 hours. So there's another thing I couldn't have done in an Instant Pot. The other thing is that my slow cooker has 30-minute increments so that I can set it You know, anywhere from 30 minutes to, I think it's 24 hours. I've never baked anything that long, but it will hold a dish that long. So it allows me a lot more, I have more alternatives for setting the time. One more thing about this particular slow cooker is that I can also, it has a searing function. So I can actually brown a roast in the very crock in which I'm going to slow cook it. And that function works. I was a little suspicious. I thought, you know, the more functions they add, they really tend to work well. But it put a beautiful frond on that beef roast I had done. So I'm just spelling out my experience with a slow cooker and pointing out how I think it's a little different than an Instant Pot. But hey, I believe in minimizing, you know, the number of appliances and clutter you have on your kitchen counter. So it certainly sounds like a very interesting appliance, especially if you're a bit squeezed for space.
Now, do you have a recipe, that famous recipe where you have to cut the corner off the tri-tip roast?
I have not needed to do that, no.
It's a funny story. We picked it up years ago. Someone who was she a chef or was she just a home cook? And she used her grandmother's recipe for cooking a tri-tip roast.
Okay.
And the instructions included, before you started to cook it, you had to cut off the triangular part on the end.
Because it didn't fit into any roaster.
Oh, no, you got it in one. She said she never knew why. And she didn't want to ask. And then finally, when I think her grandmother was on her deathbed, she said, "By the way, can you explain the function of cutting off the tip?" And she said, "Because it was the only way to get it to fit in the pan."
Right. Yeah. Well, I have several round slow cookers, and I have a baking insert that I put in one of them. And it works beautifully, so you don't have to.
Now, what is this baking insert? There are a couple of things. I mean, it never occurred to me that you could do two different dishes in one of these slow cookers in one pot.
Right.
And you can't talk about foil in your package. You talk about inserts. What is that all about?
A baking insert can actually be any oven-proof baking dish that fits into your slow cooker. I was going to say earlier, I have a 7-quart slow cooker that I use a lot. Now, that would seem to be calling for a large quantity of food. But if I want to do a smaller amount of food, for example, my husband and I, our daughters are both grown, and so it's the two of us at home most of the time. If I want to do a dinner for just the two of us, I will take like a 2-quart round baking dish, put into it whatever I want, and then set that into the slow cooker. And the reason for doing that is if I would spread in the slow cooker directly my ingredients, it would probably overcook and it would cook much too fast. I want the convenience of the slow cooker's long, slow, moist heat. So that's why I put it into a smaller container and set that into the larger slow cooker. So that's one way you can adapt if, you know, you don't want to have multiple sizes of slow cookers, but you do want a large one because you take it to a potluck or you love to have the neighbors in for dinner or you have an extended family, whatever. So it's just one way to work at not having, you know, a 3-quart, a 5-quart, and a 7-quart. On the other hand, doing that certainly has its advantages, too. About using slow cooker liners, those are the plastic bags that are made especially to fit into a slow cooker to make cleanup easier.
Oh,
and
I didn't know about those at all.
I know early on I talked to the slow cooker manufacturers and just said, what do you think about this? Is this a good idea? How does it affect the cooking process? And most of them were very cautious. They said, we don't like it because we aren't sure how, you know, will it cook longer? Will it somehow affect the texture of whatever you're cooking? Now I see that the slow cooker manufacturers are actually producing these slow cooker liners, so they must have figured it out to their satisfaction.
Yeah, I must but get I, that done for our kids. I mean, that's
it does. It eases cleanup. Then I learned this from a very inventive friend of mine. We were at a potluck together. She showed up with her slow cooker, and she had two different dishes in her slow cooker, and she had done it by putting one of the recipes into a cookbook, a slow cooker liner, and an accompanying recipe into a second slow cooker liner, and she just put them both into the crock. She was careful on her quantities to make sure that all told together they were about, they were filling the slow cooker about two-thirds full, which is the ideal amount of food you want to get a maximum result. And they cooked the same length of time. She had checked that out. And it was just a very interesting way. Then when she wanted to serve it, she just emptied it into two different serving dishes. Yeah. But she had the convenience of doing, in effect, I think it was pork and sauerkraut, as I recall. And she had done potatoes in the one liner and the pork and sauerkraut in another. And she had a complete meal by having used just one container.
Now, Phyllis, when you say a liner, is that like a big plastic bag?
Yes, she was just explaining. But you should just trying to picture what one looks like.
That is, yes, the way you described it is exactly right, but it has to be one that is manufactured for this very purpose.
Oh, sure,
because
it has
to withstand considerable heat.
Right, right.
You know, you sold all these cookbooks because you really have your finger on the pulse of what people want to cook and eat. And to one of the differences I think you commented on with this new book is we do eat differently now, and there are all these different categories of what do we call these? Not options.
Food restrictions or dietary preferences.
So you have now all these marked gluten-free, vegan, vegetarian, paleo-friendly, cooking for one or two, or cooking for picky eaters, and they all have a little symbol. And so that's one way people can find those particular things. But you also have like an index. So if you have somebody coming over for dinner who's on a paleo diet, they can look that up and refer to those recipes, right?
That is exactly right. And thank you for pointing that out. That's one of the things when I said I went to the publisher with an idea. This was one of the two ideas that I really wanted to accomplish in a new book. Because you're exactly right. I mean, the first question we ask our friends when we want them to come for dinner is, you know, can we find a date?
Yeah, who knew you'd have to do that? But I've found that that's absolutely essential anymore.
It is essential. For years we served these
dear friends. We did back and forth exchange dinners all the time. For years I kept cooking this big leg of lamb because, I mean, I got legs of lamb and Peter and I can't do it ourselves and nobody else is here living with us anymore, and then we found out he hates lamb.
for
10 years he was eating like lamb.
He'd been eating barbecued, beautifully prepared barbecue cooked on the outdoor grill, and he didn't like it. He never said a word.
Oh, bless his heart. Yeah, well, now we know to ask. You know, do you have any dietary preferences or restrictions?
Right.
I spoke with a woman in the last 2 days who said, I know exactly the problem. She said, I had my family over, and I had to make my noodles three different ways to accommodate everybody's allergies and, you know, their diets and all of that. So, yes, I counted there are 100 recipes in this book. 90 of them are either already gluten-free or I show you how to adapt them to be gluten-free.
Right, you have roots, right.
Now, right, 60 are already vegan or vegetarian, or I show you how to adapt them that way. So that's the idea. You can customize them as you need to.
Well, here's another surprise in this book. I laughed so hard when I get the more amazing uses, right?
Yes.
I used to do batik. And I've been trying to figure out how to teach. My grandchildren love crafts. And I have all these supplies and stuff, but I'm afraid to use, I used to melt the wax in an electric skillet. But it's been sitting in a damp basement for so long.
Right.
And now you say that you can actually melt your wax and you can use it for manicures and pedicures, or you could make candles, which is what I was doing. And also, you could use that for batik.
Right, I would think so.
Yeah.
So what you want to do, don't keep that as a separate slow cooker. You don't want to your leg of lamb in it the next day.
We never did that.
right. But it is. It's great.
Interesting that you have a scent diffuser, humidifier. I mean, it's you're a very complicated lady.
Well, I've had, home cooks are geniuses. And I have, through the years, just talked to lots and lots of home cooks about how they remedy all kinds of situations, and they're just full of these extraordinary ideas. So I wanted to make sure to include some of those in the book, because you're not going to find these kinds of things in the little manuals that you get with your slow cooker. The manufacturers aren't thinking about this, but I thought it was pretty clever.
I love finding it. And then one last thing I want to ask you is, well, I want to just tell our listeners that you're the first person I've ever read about who makes a creme brulee in a slow cooker.
It can be done, and they're tasty and they're beautiful. And people are so entertained. You know, that's the other thing. If you do this for guests, they're like, just a minute, where did you get that? And it's just fun to show them how the slow cooker is so adaptable.
Well, I mean, I really thoroughly enjoyed this book. Again, listeners, it's Phyllis Good, the incomparable. I'll add to that one, Phyllis Good.
You're kind.
Stalk the Crock, and it's 100 recipes and then 200 variations for every appetite. Well, well done, Phyllis Good.
Thank you so much. It's been really fun to talk with you, Anne.
You too.
And Peter.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
And since we're talking about slow cookers, this is a treasure, this book called Adventures in Slow Cooking by Sarah D. Gregorio. She has ways of using a slow cooker that you probably never in your life thought about. At least I never thought about it. It's not one of those throw it all in a pot and set it for 5 hours while I'm at the office.
Which is what we used to do.
Exactly. This is not like that. This will have you making absolutely extraordinary from soup to nuts to desserts.
And one thing you'll learn, if you learn nothing else in this track, I think it's in this one, or maybe it was Phyllis, who actually explained the difference between a pressure cooker and a slow cooker.
Now an instant pot was the issue too.
Okay, but here's the deal, listeners, so you can amuse all your friends. A pressure cooker speeds up the cooking process. And a slow cooker, guess what? Slows it down.
You mean it took you a long time to come up with that difference?
She explained it very clearly. My house, we knew nothing about pressure cookers.
Because we didn't
have one.
Right.
We didn't do anything with crock pots because we didn't have one of those either.
Right. Well, we had both in our household. But we also had spaghetti embedded in the ceiling of the kitchen.
Which is
not the case nowadays. Anyhow, this is a genius of a book.
Okay.
So check it out, Adventures in Slow Cooking by Sarah D. Gregorio.
Well, listen to our conversation first because that's a whole lot of fun as well.
Sarah D. Gregorio, I must say, this book, Adventures in Slow Cooking, is a winner. I mean, you have no idea how many slow cooking books we get. Cookbooks, you know.
Yes.
And this is properly, I think, called a 120 slow cooker recipes for people who love food. And that's the distinguishing character, I think, of this. It's not the kind of thing where you just throw a bunch of raw ingredients into a pot, turn it on, and come home from work and have dinner.
Yes.
In fact, in many respects, slow cookers were probably invented for people who don't like food very much at all.
I don't know about that. Sarah knows the origins. Tell us the origins of the slow cooker.
Yes, actually, it was invented, I think, by somebody who loved food, and that was something that was important to me. I felt like I was kind of channeling his spirit in this. His name was actually Irving Naxon, and he was born in New Jersey, but his mother was born in Lithuania, and she was Jewish and lived in a Jewish village where they observed the Jewish Sabbath starting on Friday night, and she told her son her memories, all of the villagers taking their pots of cholent to this communal oven where everyone would put their pots into the oven and then they would bank the fires for the night and everyone would go home and observe the Sabbath, during which time you wouldn't do any work, you wouldn't do any cooking. And then you would come back after sundown on Saturday and everyone would have these wonderful slow-cooked pots of stew that had been very gently cooked in the fading heat of the oven. And so Irving was an inventor. He has a number of patents to his name, but he remembered this story that his mother told him about this way of cooking unattended and how delicious the results were. And so he invented what he called a beanery, which is a reference to cholent. Yeah, it's really sweet, actually. So, you know, I think that when he invented it, he was thinking of cholent, but he is quite explicit in his patent application. He says that he hopes that this will be a tool for the, I can look up the exact quote.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. I can't remember it either, but I was really surprised that he was so forward-thinking about what it was going to do.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. He says, he wanted to provide an improved cooking means capable of meeting the diversified phases in the general art of cooking. So I think he really had, you know, aspirations for this device.
Such as he continued baking, searing, scalloping, steaming, stewing, and so forth. That's really forward thinking.
Yes. No. And I think that I hope that he would like my book because I did have him in mind.
Well, just to finish this, the history briefly of the slow cooker, he then sold his patent to another company which renamed it in the 60s, the late 60s, I think, or sometime in the 60s, the crock pot, which is where my experience with it came in. My mother had a crock pot.
Yes.
And this is probably where their history, where the reputation of the slow cooker went downhill.
Now I have a primitive question. Did he actually make one of these? And did he actually commercialize it? Or did he
Yes, he did.
Okay.
He did. So because he invented this in the 40s.
Okay.
And he produced it and marketed it actually until 1970 when he sold it to the rival company. And as you said, they then, as you said, they then rebranded it as the Crock-Pot. But I think his distribution was quite a bit more limited than the rival company's was.
Yeah, that's a big company,
So it really came to the forefront when he sold it.
Now, Peter asked me, is crock pot synonymous with a slow cooker? And I mean, lately, like on bridal registries and stuff like that, including our own son's, it's really called the slow cooker, not a crock pot.
Yes, it's like tissues and Kleenex or you know, that kind of thing.
Yes.
Where it sort of goes by crock pot, but really that's a brand name.
Now, I think it's very significant that Grant Achatz wrote the foreword to your book, because he really, I think, he gives a lot of cred to this as an important tool in the kitchen.
Yes, I hope so. That's he was very kind to write the foreword. I really admire him. This book, the idea for the book actually came out of a story that I did with him when I was an editor at Food and Wine magazine. I worked on a story with him about how much he loves slow cookers, which of course is a surprise because he's famous for his modernist cooking and you don't really associate that with him.
Well, he says it's sous vide, essentially, isn't it?
Yeah, I think when you use a slow cooker thoughtfully, the result can be very similar to sous vide.
Yeah. Now, can you do sous vide in a slow cooker?
You know, you could, but the issue is that
circulation.
Without the water circulator, yeah exactly. But certainly you can. One thing I suggest in the book is getting a probe thermometer. So that's one of the thermometers that has sort of a lead that you can close the lid over it, and then you can monitor the temperature from the outside without lifting the lid. So that's one really good way that you can cook with a lot more precision in a slow cooker. So, for instance, you know, if you wanted to do something where you were oil poaching at a certain temperature, or if you were you were doing something like sous vide, you could monitor the temperature, and that's something that that I think is really helpful. And it's quite an affordable device. You can get on Amazon for, you know, $20.
Yeah. Now you talk about the different. Not all slow cookers are made equal. So you suggest some, and the thing to pay attention to is the actual temperatures available to you, and the how you set it and the warming. So you ended up liking which one?
So my favorite is the KitchenAid.
As with everything, right?
Yeah, KitchenAid is great.
It's not KitchenAid, it's Cuisinart. I think our kids have
Cuisinart. That's right. Cuisinart has a good one, too. But I do like the KitchenAid the best because it runs very, very low and gentle. So its low setting is truly low. It stays below a simmer. A lot of slow cookers, if you use the low setting, it will eventually rise to a simmer, which is not ideal for long braising. So the KitchenAid has a sort of a continuously adjusting thermostat within it that will keep the low setting below a simmer, which is unique. And I think it's very, very useful. And if people do a lot of slow cooking, it's important to be able to cook at that very low temperature.
You also answer a question, one of the questions I've always had. What's the difference between a slow cooker and an Instant Pot?
Yes. So Instant Pot is great. I have an Instant Pot, and I like it very much.
Do you like? Is it made by? Is there one company that makes that Instant Pot?
Yes.
Okay, because I've been having a go around with the CEO of that company.
So I think it's a little bit like Crock-Pot is to slow cooker. So the Instant Pot is a kind of pressure cooker, or I should say it's a multi-cooker. It has different settings, but I think most people are excited about it and using it for its pressure cooking ability. But it's interesting to me that they sort of, people seem to get them a bit confused, but they really do kind of provide very opposite kinds of cooking. So I use my pressure cooker when I need to get something done quickly, whereas I use my slow cooker when I'm planning ahead and want to let something cook for a long period of time. So I think they're complementary devices.
Yeah, they're opposite in terms of functionality, right?
Exactly.
Well, the Instant Pot cooks multiple ways. It's not
right,
just
but the pressure cooker, the pressure cooker versus the slow cooker.
Exactly.
And I remember, I think one of my aunties used to have pressure cooker when we were growing up, and my mother didn't have one, and I don't think she ever wanted one. But, we've had several, and we kind of worry they might explode.
Well,
yes,
they I remember as a child having spaghetti embedded in the ceiling.
I think the older models were sort of notorious for having
They had a little clock thing.
Well, now let's talk about the other thing that's revolutionary about this book is the kinds of things you set out to cook, because it's not just the chili that our son makes
all the time.
That he and his wife make all the time. Seems to happen on days we're going to arrive. you get sort of a little tired of it. But you have some really sophisticated stuff. Give us some examples.
Oh, thank you. That's nice to hear. Well, yeah, you know, I mean, part of the reason that I wanted to write this book was because I think people are thinking about their slow cooker in a very limited way. And the truth is that you can do a lot more with it than you might imagine. So, for instance, I love to use it as a bain-marie. I do custards in it. So, for instance, a pot de crème or cheesecake, things like that are really wonderful made in the slow cooker and quite foolproof. You really can't mess it up. They end up being very light and silky. They cook very gently. So that's one thing that people might not think of. I do things like granola, and other sort of crunchy mixes like, a spiced nut mixture. And those are doable in the slow cooker when, you leave the lid cracked a bit so that you don't get the condensation and so that whatever you're making stays crunchy. And that's something that I think can be really helpful when, for instance, in the summer, maybe you don't want to turn on your oven, you don't want to heat up your entire house. Also, the slow cooker uses a lot less energy, and so it can be a bit more of an environmentally friendly cooking method. Or even during the holidays when maybe you don't have room in your oven and you want to make a batch of granola or a batch of spiced nuts, things like that.
This is some place where you and I sort of align, is I'm not a happy morning person either. And being able to prepare your breakfast overnight while you're sleeping, that to me is a good idea.
What's the one with the fried egg on top of it there?
Yes, that's the savory oatmeal.
That
is one of my favorites.
That looks gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous.
Now, there was a biryani in there, someone too, that really illustrated the use of a large number of spices in combination. I thought and you compare it to cooking something in a tagine, which in a way was the original slow cooker.
Yes, exactly. It has a lot of resonance in different kinds of cooking methods that come from around the world. There are a lot of traditions that use sort of a closed, low, moist cooking environment to make some really delicious dishes, and sort of opening up the slow cooker to that was important to me. Like you said, the biryani, a lot of biryanis are cooked in a pot that is sealed with like a wheat dough just to make it completely airtight. And so that you get all that steam inside the pot and all of the flavor, it sort of cooks in its own steam. And I realized that could be replicated in the slow cooker. And it works really, really, really well. So that's the kind of thing that I was hoping that people would be excited about. So I'm glad that you brought that up.
Yeah. Is that equivalent to cooking in this method? Is that similar to like a tandoor oven, or is a tandoor oven much hotter?
Tandoor oven is very hot, yes. Okay. So tandoor is more like
it's the opposite. It's the opposite, really.
Opposite, mm-hmm, exactly.
Now, here's the recipe I want to eat this very minute, which is your spicy kimchi and pork ramen. Oh, is that beautiful, too?
Oh, thank you so much. That's one of my favorites. That is something that has so much flavor and really is a great weeknight meal because it is quite easy, very, very simple. You get a lot of flavor from the kimchi and a lot of flavor from the gochujang, which is that fermented chili and bean paste.
We have it always in our refrigerator. Most people are surprised about that, but
that's the Korean one.
That's the Korean one. But you know,
if you have it, delicious.
you can boost flavor in 2 seconds.
I'm a little bit worried that we might be sent to jail for harboring Koreans.
Oh, right. Exactly.
Well, gochujang is a really useful thing to have around, like you say. It is just super flavorful. I actually, you know, I put it in tuna salad as well.
Yes.
That's not slow cooker related, but I find that it works as a flavor boost in so many different contexts.
It's almost as good as carrot pickle.
Carrot pickle in our household
That's an inside story. I bought a jar of carrot pickle about 20 years ago, and it only got thrown out when we changed refrigerators.
Oh dear!
Never spoiled.
I think the Korean chili paste is much the same.
Yes, you can keep it. It doesn't go bad. Although I will say, once you start using it, you really do go through it.
It's like fish sauce.
Yes.
We have fish sauce on the other side of the refrigerator, so they're not together.
You know, what I think is, you used to work for Food and Wine. Is it Food and Wine that just did the, or was that server? You have a section on entertaining, and but your take is the same as whichever magazine it was. This,
yes,
about
it was Bon
having
Appetit,
people over.
Hmm? Mm-hmm. I think it was Bon Appetit.
Oh, okay. But mm-hmm. having people over as opposed to entertaining. And I
yes.
think that that's very much what happens today. I mean, I remember these party things, you know, yeah. with the dinners. Where, in fact, I had a ton of it left over from my mother. You know, with everything matching and all
yes.
the glasses for everything and separate plates for, you know, all these different dishes. And, yes. And that was,
yes.
that was a massive undertaking. But having people over for good food and a bunch of wine is a very appealing
yes.
idea in today's world.
Yes. And I think people shouldn't deny themselves that pleasure. You know, it is such a wonderful way to spend an evening with your favorite people in your house with some good food, with some good wine. It just, there's really no better way to have a, you know, a Friday night or a Saturday night.
I suspect, Sarah, that you must have quite a lot of friends, but do you have room for two more?
Anytime, please come.
Well, we're actually going to be in New York in a couple of weeks.
please come for dinner. I'll make you something in the slow cooker.
Pencils in your book. We actually be in Brooklyn.
She's in Brooklyn. That's where we're going to be for West Star Chefs. Star Chefs. It's Brooklyn. Yeah. So, it's like
we're looking for a place. We're actually looking for a place.
Well, if you're looking for a good meal, you can come to my house.
Well, I really think that this is it's a really stellar book, and so once again, listeners, it's Adventures in Slow Cooking by Sarah DiGregorio, and it just elevates this whole concept of slow cooking and gives it a whole new dimension of flavor and how it's done. So, Sarah, I just think it's so useful, and you should be congratulated on doing such a great job.
And
thank you so much. It's really kind of you to say.
And you've been nominated for James Beard Award. Maybe you'll win one this time, huh?
Yes, that would be great.
Right. I bet it goes up. Okay, Sarah, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you very much. It was such a pleasure to speak with both of you. I really appreciate your support of the book.
Good. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so you know a whole lot more than you knew before about cooking to the right temperature.
Cooking it slow.
and we'll be cooking. Why are you laughing at me?
You're being silly.
Oh, I am being silly. You have to be silly every once in a while. You have to be silly. Why not?
Right.
Okay, so let's be silly. Same time, same place next week.
Bye-bye.
Listeners, bye-bye.